Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
And they've got a goal. They've won it. Raheem Sterling in the very last minute has got a third for Manchester City.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of a snowy Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
It's more slush now, to be honest with you.
Good. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
You should get home.
Do you remember the last time we did a podcast and there was that snowstorm in November?
Oh, yeah, and you didn't get home for hours.
We ended around 9 on a commute that is typically 25 to 30 minutes for me, and I walked in my door at 2:15 in the morning. Yeah. It was like the city had never seen snow before. It was super weird.
I have to be honest. I got home that night, and I was, like, genuinely concerned for you. And then I text you at about midnight, and you still hadn't got home.
Oh, I was still on the West Side Highway in Manhattan. I hadn't crossed over the Henry Hudson Bridge yet at midnight.
I did chuckle at midnight at that point.
Of course you did. You were rooting for it.
No.
You were probably out there with a hose icing the road over ahead of me.
No.
Rather than salting it.
I paid Larry to do that.
What a show we have coming up for you. Of course, it is another Champions League edition of the podcast. After yesterday's games, I wasn't sure if we were going to have a ton to talk about, and then today happened. And I feel a lot better about it. A lot of action today. Fascinating Manchester City match. Somewhat controversial Atletico Madrid match. We'll talk about all that. Of course, there is, even though it was nil-nils across the board on Tuesday, that does not mean that those games were void of conversation talking points, because there is still a lot to talk about. So I'm very excited about that. There's a big what to watch for. We got a cup final this weekend. How about that? Could be the last match for Maurizio Sarri.
Yeah. It's one of those that may be overshadowed by an actual league game on Sunday. So
yeah, I would probably agree with that, to be honest. Red cards, man of the match. Also a new, I won't say that it's a new show, but it was a show recently brought to my attention that I think you would love.
Oh.
Amazon Prime, The Night Manager. You familiar?
No, I'm
based
not.
Based on a John Le Carré novel, or Le Carré, I don't know how people say it. Spy drama. A lot of similarities to James Bond, I would say. But it's a 6-episode miniseries. So that's it. 6 episodes, bang. Beginning, middle, resolution. It's not one of these shows. And I love watching, you know, binge-watching shows on Amazon and Netflix. But let's be honest. Like, sometimes you want to sit down and have a something end. You know, you get into Game of Thrones and it's like, well, here comes 10 years of, like, not knowing how this is going to play out. Like, yeah. It's nice sometimes that, like, so miniseries, a 6-episode miniseries, it's great.
We want resolution in our
right.
lives.
Right. So, Amanda and I, we watched 2 episodes 2 nights ago, 2 episodes last night. We'll watch 2 tomorrow, and that'll be it. In 1 week, we'll be done.
That's why True Detective season 1 was so perfect. It was great. And I'm sure the new True Detective is good. I haven't got into it yet.
Yeah.
I have started watching something a little bit different. I've discovered Rick and Morty.
Oh, yeah.
On Adult Swim.
Okay.
The humor is right up your alley.
Is it really?
It really is. It's clever, but it's also at times sophomoric.
Love sophomoric humor.
But the writing is extremely smart and clever and articulate and funny, and the storylines are, the characters are great.
Okay.
It's actually...
No, you've never steered me wrong in your show recommendations.
Now, it's off the wall, but still.
And by the way, I want to say that my recommendation is only to you. Because I know your sensibilities and I know what you like. It is not to anyone else. Should you choose to watch the show, I bear no responsibility. Dunkirk changed me. I just didn't think there was any way we would come back from seeing that movie and talking about it. And we, like,
the
listener
backlash. I just
didn't think there would be blowback from that. And I was stunned by how many people hated it. Not just were like, whatever, like hated it.
Like thought it was poor.
So that changed me, and I said I can't recommend a movie or a TV show again. So these are just to you.
Oh, we've got a problem in the mailbag then.
Oh, no.
Because I think we should, there should be a cultural question in each mailbag, just to mix it up. Because football and culture go together.
Yeah.
So there's one, and I hope you've thought about it, because they did prime you for it.
Yeah, I know, and everyone will hate my answer and mock it, but whatever. Music is a deeply personal thing, and it's just the way I feel. So I do know what you're going to...
Before we get into the proper Champions League...
I have my finger on the button for the anthem.
There is another Champions League, which we will get to later.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Round these hair parts.
A much more localized version.
Yes. With its own theme tune written by me.
And its own level of prestige.
Prestige is a strong word considering the debacle that happened.
Let's talk about this Champions League. Yep. Oh, we start, let's go chronologically from back to front. which I guess would be today, then I'm confused.
What
we're going to talk about
doing?
Today's games. We're going to talk about today's games first, because that's what's most fresh in all of your minds, starting with Atletico Madrid 2, Juventus 0. Great matchup. Two teams with high profile, defending, great scoring options up front. Griezmann, Ronaldo, Diego Costa. It's just like a matchup that I felt like I could really get behind. And I thought it was a pretty interesting, entertaining game, to be honest.
And that's why I watched the opposite game to that with an eye on this game. So I did the double screening again, and you know how I feel about it.
It's so hard to watch two games
at once.
It's
very hard. But from what I gleaned, you are completely right in what you said. This was a fascinating battle, and I think a battle that was fairly won by the home side.
I think so, too. Ronaldo had a great chance early on, a classic Ronaldo free kick from, 25, 30 yards out almost.
Came off his foot like a missile, but yeah. Oblak dealt with it, and that was pretty much it from him. A few flashes, but generally, I think in the first half, he only had two touches inside the opposition penalty area, which tells you a story in itself.
Yeah. Yeah, Atletico Madrid were very good in this game. Now, they could have had and thought maybe they did have a penalty in the first half thanks to Diego Costa going down near the corner of the box. Now, in the end, VAR came in and took over and ruled that it was a foul, but outside the box, I guess that's the right call. When I watched it in real time and saw the first replay, I said, oh, this is another classic hand on a shoulder, man drops to the ground like he's been shot. When I watched it again and you told me keep an eye on his feet, maybe. He was clipped, but I think...
I'm less and less confident in that proclamation about that. You know what it might have been? It might have been just play on. Like, seriously, play on.
But these referees feel like they have to do something now. When a guy goes down and that... Like, there's just so much of a focus on what the referee's going to do. Yeah, I guess he could have gone play on there. I think that probably would have been... Like, if Atletico had scored there, I would have felt like maybe that was a bit unjust for
you. He pointed to the spot, and thankfully it was remedied, but to be honest with you, it really didn't look anything close. I'm wondering would the referee, had he not known that VAR would save him, inevitably have given anything there.
And then it went 0-0 at the half, and then it went to the second half when VAR played an even bigger role, when Alvaro Morata, who, God bless him, desperately needed something good to happen for him on a big stage, and he scores a header, which puts Atletico ahead 1-0, and then VAR intervenes again because Chiellini went flying on a quote-unquote push from Morata right before the goal, and VAR decided, and the referee decided, that it was not a goal, that Chiellini was fouled.
70% of headed goals would be ruled out. If VAR was available, if this is the level of non-contact, and Chiellini played to the VAR because he knew if he gets contact, throws himself forward, the contact will be confirmed, and there's no way of proving that there was enough requisite contact to propel him. Like, it was comedy the way he fell.
Yeah,
for a guy who we know to be made of, at least 85% granite.
Right.
For him to do that.
But he's smart.
It was a super header. It was a super cross. It deserved to be allowed.
I felt bad for Morata. Now, here's what needs to happen, though. Because I know you, and I know what you want to do here as you smugly take a sip from your water with your pinky extended. You want to make this an indictment of VAR and call it a disaster and say that the game doesn't need this. And I understand the gut reaction to do that today, but I would say that is still not fair. I think referees need to figure out how to adjudicate these types of plays. And right now, they're just not there yet. I still think it's in the best interest of the game to make sure the right calls are made and we get the right results. Like, if there's no VAR, then that Costa penalty in the first half is happening. And now we're talking about an injustice that was done that way against Juventus. So I do think that it's right for it to exist in the game, but
no,
this is what you're going to get.
No, it's not about mastering it. It's not about mastering
it.
This is what it's going to be. It's going to be players barraging, and in the case of Manchester City, Schalke, surrounding the referee to the point where he has to get the two captains together and tell them basically to piss off. And let him talk to them. So allow 5 minutes to go by then. 5 minutes, interrupting the play for
come
this.
Come on, man. That's been happening for years. Happens in every game. John Terry's Chelsea were famous for it long before VAR was even a thought on anyone's head.
Yeah, but it's only going to exacerbate that. It's not going to solve that problem.
It's going to make it worse. Everybody wants...
Well, it may not exacerbate it if you just get a situation where the ref says, everyone stop, we have VAR, I don't need you to be telling me what happened here, I'm going to go watch it on a screen.
Everybody wants... seems to want to be, for football to be this absolutist thing, this where nothing can possibly be wrong or something can be shades of grey. Like, for example, and we'll get to it, the Otamendi handball. Did the ball strike his arm? Yes. But there's no way he could have got his arm out of the way. He was trying to retract it. But as Barney Roney pointed out, when you use slow motion like this and you slow it right down, everything becomes much more different than it actually is in reality. And it's just, you're just going to consist. Now, the handball rule, people are going to say we need more absolute clarity on what that is.
Yeah.
But even with offsides and things like this, I just don't think it's worth this kind of hassle. And John Nicholson, who writes for Football 365, this was his tweet. All pro VAR people keep telling us it's the official's fault for not making VAR work efficiently. No, it's your fault for thinking it's necessary. Don't try and lay it off on the ref. It's all down to you. It won't get better. You wanted it, you got it, it's your fault. I buy into that. I don't see this getting better. I don't see how it can get better. And the whole, I just don't think it's worth it. Like, it got two decisions, in my view, two vital decisions tonight wrong in two games.
In the Manchester City game, too?
Manchester City game, the Otamendi handball wasn't a handball. It swung the game.
Okay, and it got decisions right today also.
I just think... I think
that would have been ruled incorrect.
It's not... I can't... I don't know. I haven't...
Look, I feel comfortable in coming down on the side in this of... when the game is over, the right calls will be made more often than not. When in the past, like, how many games did we walk away from just frustrated?
I didn't walk away frustrated. I told you this is an existential argument about what you want from sports. I want TV to show me the game. I'm willing to accept the social contract of football, which is the referee refs it to the best of his ability and is not taking bongs or backhanders, and he does it in quote-unquote good faith, and the linesmen do the same. I'm happy to accept this. I'm happy for mistakes to go by. You saw the way I was with the nil-nil with Leicester and Liverpool. If there was VAR there...
When were we handed this social contract? Because
It exists. Otherwise, we're going to end up with what we have in America, which is just stoppage after stoppage after stoppage after stoppage, broken play, the life sucked out of the game. And it's not the game that...
I mean, honestly, are you finding that the life has been sucked out of these games?
There was 4 minutes there. And, well, no, not yet, Andrew, but I can see it happening. These are big...
I don't understand. So this was such a success after the World Cup, but today it's a disaster and we need to get rid of it.
Well, one of the problems that should be noted in the Manchester City Schalke game was that the sideline screens in Gelsenkirchen weren't working.
Right.
So the referee couldn't use them. Well, then, I mean, hearing in his ear. No, but this is a game. He is the ultimate arbiter of what happens on the field. That's the idea of the referee. Yet he is guessing, Andrew, which is unfair to him. Totally unfair.
Of course it is.
And it was wrong.
It cannot be an indictment on the whole system because of a fluke thing that happened where screens weren't working today at an individual match.
No. Well, the screens were working at the Wanda.
Morata's goal should've... made a subjective call. And I'm sure that will happen again if subjective decisions are going to be left to VAR. And I think these guys are going to figure out, you know, they'll recalibrate in their mind what kind of contact warrants and doesn't warrant a penalty decision.
Or what will happen is you'll see the leg of Bonucci falling to the floor as he did on the opener.
And nothing was called, and I think eventually these guys will realize that we can't just rely on that.
It was in his head.
This is new for everyone. I mean, Bonucci is falling to the floor hoping that VAR... By the way, that's a thing that wasn't happening before tonight.
I know.
Defenders falling to the floor trying
exactly.
to get a call.
You're trying to perfect it and to get things right.
Because that's what's important. Is what is important.
That's what's important.
Getting things right. Yes, in a sporting event. Yes, that's what's right.
You go to a game and what you want to see is that things... getting things right. That's the reason for sport. That's why we have sport in our lives.
I want to know when I go to a game that when I leave that game, the right team won that game. that I wasn't jobbed because the referee made himself front and center and was making decisions all night long that ruined the game.
You are spreading this narrative that teams are regularly getting jobbed. That is not true. That is not happening even.
And you're spreading a narrative that this is bringing games to screeching halts. That's not true either.
No, I see this is
and that referees are making wrong decisions on VAR. I'd say 95% of the time they're getting it right. And the game and the momentum of the game is not getting destroyed by it.
We're in the early stages of it, right? It's not even in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. I see this coming down the line, Andrew. And this is more foreboding than what's actually happening yet. That's just a gut feeling the way I see it.
Well, we'll never agree on this because it's never going to get perfected. I mean, you're going to want total perfection from this every
time.
I don't want
perfection. I've never wanted it in sport. But it's not what I watch for.
Let's talk about the rest of the game. We often say the PSG will have failed with their Neymar experiment. If they're not to get something out of the Champions League. And I'm starting to wonder, with Juventus being down 2 goals heading into the second leg and it not looking all that likely that they're going to turn that around, Atletico is a hard team to break down. Would the same be true for them if they go out with Ronaldo?
I mean, was... Even like, more so, though.
He's not... Like, they're winning Serie A titles left and right. They don't need Ronaldo for that. He's there for this.
No, he's to make sure that what happened in Cardiff, which he inflicted on them 2 years ago, doesn't happen again. That's why he's there. And the drop-off in his performance, he hasn't scored this few Champions League goals since 05-06. That is... Yeah. Look... And look at the money, Andrew, as well. As much as we think Juventus is a bottomless pit, it's not a bottomless pit in the same way that maybe PSG or Man City are. I think it's an absolute... It's not an absolute failure, but it's a failure of the reason for what he was brought. This 2-0 tonight, he can go around saying all he wants that he's won 5 European Cups and you've won none, as he was doing in the mix zone.
Felt very Mourinho of him.
Yeah. Miguel Delaney tweeted that he was doing... Who was he doing it to in the mix zone, by the way?
I didn't see.
But yeah, you can't say that it's anything other than a failure if they don't get past the round of 16.
Yeah, I would certainly agree. And we go to the other match today, Schalke and Manchester City in Germany, and it ends 3-2 to City thanks to the goal that you heard at the start of the show today from Raheem Sterling. Great fight back from Man City, down 2-1 on 2 penalties, one of which, like you say, the handball in the box that they may feel hard done by. It's a rule that I'll never quite fully grasp.
I don't know what Otamendi's supposed to do in that scenario. The ball's coming straight through. It's coming at him. He's not making he's not trying to hit it with his arm. He's actually, if anything, trying to tuck his arm away.
But the fact that his arm was out in that sort of position in the first place, like, you're right, he's doing all he can to get his arm out of the way. But the fact of the matter is, it still hits his arm, and you could say that his arm was kind of retreating from an unnatural position.
Okay.
I don't know.
And I don't want to go back to the screaming match. Because it is tedious. I do find it tedious, too.
Well, because everyone's dug in, so there's almost no point. Like, you're right. It is existential. You and I will never, like, we just kind of see it differently.
Yeah.
And we both believe that the way we see it is the way that people should see it. Like, I think that, you know, getting the right result at the end of the game is what's important. You think that, that nuance is
matters.
Is also important.
Yeah.
And, like... You know, I don't know what else there is to say about it.
Yeah, right. But look how we're getting into it. Like, we're not talking about the fact that right before that penalty, which changed the game, City were 1-0 up. They were dominating the game. And Raheem Sterling has a chance to pretty much ice it. Because no matter what people tell you about this, and I saw Derek Ray tweeting that, Schalke were much better than we expected them to be. Well, they actually weren't. They dug in. They were well organized, but they weren't much better. City should have ran away with this one. And thankfully, in the end, with the 3 away goals, you can kind of feel that they have been vindicated in their performance. But, Sterling could have finished it. And then this thing changes the game completely. They get another penalty, which is a penalty. Fernandinho just...
Takes his guy down.
I mean, yeah. Clamoring all over Sané. And then we should note also Weston McKennie's contribution to Schalke's performance. Weston McKennie was very much like every other Schalke player, chasing shadows for a lot of the game because City kept the ball well. But he won a lot of his tackles, he did a lot of good things, and he won the ball back that led to the shot that led to the penalty, which was very, very good. But City in the second half totally deserved it. They knocked on the door, and Sané's free kick was...
Special. It's funny how legacies are made. Like, I don't know what's going to go on to happen with Manchester City. And, you know, maybe they go on and win this competition. They might be the best team left with the way other prominent clubs are playing right now. And, you know, Pep could get his trophy outside of Bayern or outside of Barcelona. But it's like, it's funny. They're down 2-1 to Schalke. And let's say if that's how this game ends, who knows? Maybe City crash out in the round of 16. And like Pep, the genius, right, the way he wants to play, his tiki-taka, the quick passing and all that intricate passing, playing out from the back. And look at how City turned this around. A free kick from Leroy Sané and a blast out from Ederson. Defender basically falls down for Schalke.
What
and Sterling,
a pass.
And Sterling goes in and scores. Like, it's just, it's not really, like, those are two things that, like, City aren't necessarily known for. Well, I guess their free kick ability with Sané,
no, you're right,
with De Bruyne. But, like, it's not classic Pep how they scored these goals and came back and won this game.
It wasn't pass, 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 recycle, get to the end line, cut back, tap in. It wasn't that kind of a goal. Neither of the goals were, but Ederson, by the way, there's a lot of people saying he just thumped it down the field. I mean, okay, you can take that view, but we know enough now that this guy is looking for runs and passes.
Andrew, I mean, he put the ball right at where Sterling was headed. So I'm not going to say that that was a lucky play.
No,
by Ederson.
And he turned the fullback as well. It was actually really clever from Sterling, who engaged the fullback a little bit. The fullback then goes to lean on Sterling, and Sterling's not there. He's in behind, and a super finish. I thought it was real resiliency from City. I'm not sure, even in the previous two seasons with City, that they would have. It was certainly not the first season, maybe last season, but the fact that they came back into this one. And Andrew, honestly, I think they played well. Now, Adam Mendy being sent off made things difficult, but this was a really solid away performance, and that should be them through.
I would think so too. That's Otamendi's first red card for Manchester City ever. Not in Europe, not away from home. He's never had one.
That's staggering.
In his 161st appearance.
Wow.
His first red. Also, Leroy Sané, a shout to him because, you know, the way his season started and like his summer with Germany, I don't know, people, like, there were seeds of doubt that were being implanted in your head. Like, everything I see with Sané tells me he's one of the best players in the league and therefore one of the best players in Europe. But like, great managers, Yogi Love and Pep, are like telling me that he's not as good as I think he is. But like, I think I'm ready to say, like, you guys be damned. Like, I've decided he's great. Sané's been directly involved in 8 goals in his last 7 appearances in all competitions for City. 3 goals, 5 assists. And he comes up huge for them tonight.
That free kick as well is central. And sometimes when you see a free kick taker step up, you think if he's left or right, for some reason, it's more of an advantage. When you're central, you have to do something to make it curl. You know what I mean? You have to be able to whip it. And he... I can't explain what happens to the ball midway through the flight. It just veers off. Like, when you see it, you ever see a missile being launched and it goes up straight and then kind of whips because it's obviously got some guidance program on it.
Right.
And look at where it ends up in the side net in the top corner.
Incredible. Couldn't have done it any better. Let's see. We move to Tuesday's games. A couple of nil-nils. We start with Liverpool and Bayern Munich. One of those Anfield nights, but not quite because no one scored. And there wasn't really much reason to cheer.
And Liverpool were at home on one of those Anfield nights. And as you always say,
they can only be at home on an Anfield night.
No, well, you were complaining that they always seem to be at home on these.
They play 100 games at home every year.
and that's why we have so many of these European nights.
Right. Let's see. Who's this a better result for?
Now, I'm not fudging it. Two schools of thought on this one, Andrew. Mm-hmm. The first is that in withstanding the early goal, the collapse like Roma and Manchester City did last season at Anfield, mm-hmm. Bayern have done their job. And I can kind of subscribe to that. The other school of thought is that Liverpool may not have conceded at Anfield, which is, you know, you don't want to give away the away goal, but they have basically set up for Bayern a high-stakes game now. Because Bayern Munich, we expect, are going to come out at the Allianz and try and attack. They're at home. And Liverpool's counter-attack, knowing that away goal is so precious, Liverpool might only need one. Like, a score draw will put Liverpool through.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to hurt Munich, I think. I'm veering towards it suits Liverpool best.
I think I saw that in the, I don't know if it's SPI or 538, heading into the second leg, it is literally, you know how they do their percentage chance, who has a greater percentage? This one, I believe it was this game, it's literally 50-50.
Right.
Which is honestly how I feel. In terms of who this is a better result for, I'm so conflicted because I feel like if you didn't watch the game and you saw that it ended 0-0, and you're operating under the notion, of course, that Virgil van Dijk is suspended, you know, Gomez is still out, like, you would look at that and say, wow, no van Dijk, and Bayern didn't score a goal. Not only did they not score a goal, they didn't actually have a shot on target. Now, the Alisson save off Matip's foot is kind of like a asterisk to that. But nevertheless, Bayern did not generate a shot on goal,
right.
Didn't score, and Van Dijk didn't play. So you would look at that and say, okay, like, I'll applaud Liverpool for that effort because I probably wouldn't have thought that coming in. But if you did watch the game, it did feel like, at least in the first half, it feels a little in the second, but in the first half, it just felt like Liverpool, it was chance after chance. You know, Sadio Mane, one after another, Salah had a header at the far post that he put wide. Like, if you watch the game, you probably think, ooh, Liverpool are probably feeling a little bit hard done to have not walked out of there with one goal.
You know, we talk about those stats, the clear-cut chances. Well, apparently Liverpool had three. And that is probably a fair reflection.
All right.
Mane had two, and then Salah had one. I thought Liverpool, on another night, say Mane scores that one where he's on the turn, it's the ricochet from the Keita shot,
mm-hmm.
and for some reason he kind of loses his bearings and just drags it wide.
Scuffed it,
yeah,
I don't know.
If that goes in, you could see Liverpool going on to maybe win that 2-0. I didn't think Bayern troubled. Apart from Gnabry on Robertson for about 10 minutes where you thought, oh boy,
yeah,
he is going to get skint. And I'm surprised, actually, they didn't target that side more. Apart from that, I didn't think Munich troubled Liverpool. That said, I thought Hummels, who was supposed to be a weak link because he's an old man now, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had a great game for Munich. Maybe they can marshal Liverpool. They'll be confident of marshalling Liverpool again at home. And maybe they think they can eke out the win. But if you look at players like James Rodriguez, Robert Lewandowski, they weren't in the game. And I thought Liverpool in the centre of the park, in the key area that they needed to win between Keita, Wijnaldum and Henderson, they won that battle. From your point of view, you probably think Liverpool will be kicking themselves. They didn't get maybe a 1 or 2-0 win here.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of from what I saw in the first half. Like I said, the second half, I didn't really think much of any of it.
It fizzled out a little bit.
Yeah, but in the first half, I really thought that Liverpool played well enough in that game to have gotten a goal, and they just couldn't finish.
If you're Bayern Munich and you're looking at last season, you're looking at what happened to Roma and Manchester City, over the two legs, Andrew. In the first half at Anfield, those ties were effectively over. So in that point of view, Munich kind of withstood the blitz of Liverpool, and that's what you wanted to do. That's the first thing you wanted to do. But on the other hand, Liverpool go to the Allianz Arena knowing one goal might be enough.
And Bayern will not have Joshua Kimmich for the second leg.
No.
Thanks to the yellow card he received. So, yeah, I would imagine, I guess both, it's one of those weird ones where I bet both clubs are heading into the second leg feeling like we got this.
Finally poised, I believe, is the term.
That's Sadio Mane, good game or bad game? Like, help me.
Right. Found himself in great positions, which is job number one of a striker.
Right.
Finishing was just poor.
Yeah.
Pass selection wasn't great either. There was the one before the glaring miss that we just talked about, where he's got two people. If he just centres it, drives it low, goes wide. There was the attempt at the bicycle kick, which, I mean, he had two attempts, I think, at a bicycle kick. One got...
The one went wildly
wide.
Out of play.
Yeah, and the other one was a bit closer, I guess. He is one of those players that when you watch him, you think of, yes, he's a good goal scorer, but is he the polished finisher?
Mm-hmm. And this has been him for forever.
Yeah.
This has always kind of been the knock on him. I'll tell you what, though. I'll take this 10 times out of 10 as opposed to, like, what Lukaku was giving United under Jose. Where it's just like, wait, Lukaku played today?
Right.
You know, like, you ended this game, and yeah, Mane, like, it might have been embarrassing at times, like a striker who can't finish chances, or at least even put them on net in opportunities where you think he could, but you're hearing his name over and over and over. That's important.
And to
not know that a striker played, I think, is worse.
I totally agree with you, because it's like what the old managers used to say, well, he keeps getting in to the right position. He keeps finding space. He keeps getting chances. Sometimes it's a matter of luck. Sometimes it's a matter of rustiness. And he will eventually convert a chance. The same thing they used to say about Andy Cole when he was at Man United. Andy Cole will miss two shots to score a goal, or three shots to score a goal.
Yeah.
I would prefer that.
By the way, I do have a trivia question for you.
Of course you do.
I saw this on Opta, and I thought, that's just perfect. Who are the three players to have scored for both Bayern and Liverpool in the Champions League?
Three players?
Have scored for both of those clubs in Champions League play.
God. I'm going to embarrass myself here.
Well, I put you on the spot.
Why is this?
I could give you a hint.
Hold on. I'm blanking now, but I'm going to say Babel.
No. One of them currently is on Liverpool. Doesn't usually start. Did not start in this match.
Jordan Shaqiri.
Yes, he is one.
Okay.
Another one.
How far back are we going with the other one now?
We're going back, I'd say, to like mid-2000s with the other two, with both of the other two.
Why am I blank? Oh, Dietmar Hamann.
That's right.
Oh my God.
And then one more. Maybe definitely the best of these three players. Scored a really memorable goal.
Oh, my God. Xabi Alonso.
There you go.
Oh, good
All
Lord.
Right, so you did it, though.
No, it was poor. It was poor.
You went 3-for-3. It just took you a while.
No, it was disappointing. I'm disappointed in myself.
All right. Well, then I'm not going to pat you on the back.
Is it weird? I don't really think an awful lot of Xabi Alonso's time at Bayern Munich. Not that he wasn't good, but
no, I get that.
Why does that not pop in quickly? I don't know.
I understand that. Let's see. Last but not least here, Lyon and Barcelona. 0-0 as well. I mean, it's hard to sit here and, like, I don't want to rip Barcelona. 25 shots in this one. So many good opportunities. Like, you know, weird things happening. Like Jordi Alba centering one to Leo Messi in the center of the 18-yard box, and he just skies it, you know, into, as you would say, row Z. Like, so bad result for Barcelona, but I will not say that it was a bad performance.
No, I don't think it was a bad performance either. And we should probably give props to Lyon, who in the first half created, you know, a fair amount of chances considering the opposition. And what a save by Marc-Andre Ter Stegen. Like, that was just...
You're talking about the one he pushed onto the bar?
Oh, have you seen some of the photos? Oh, spectacular. Might be my favourite save of the season so far.
Oh, my.
Which obviously everybody cares about.
Means everything. Everyone.
Well, Marc-Andre Ter Stegen will probably get in contact with me crying, delighted that I gave him that plaudit. Mm. But, and Lyon were very compact in the way that they defended. They made it difficult, but they still gave up a host of chances. You just wonder about the form of players like Suarez. And if Messi is a tiny bit off, like just a little bit off in his finishing, where are the goals coming from?
Well, I mean, it is Barcelona. Like you say, Suarez,
yes,
but no. I know, I've got a stat. Suarez has now gone 16 straight Champions League away matches without a goal. Hasn't scored away since October of 2015.
That's monstrous.
Suarez.
Yeah.
Hard to figure out. Usman, you know, Dembele, who had a number of chances in this one. I don't know. Like, they're not a one-man team. Messi might be the best player in the world, but other guys can score for them.
We all feel they're going to get it done at the Nou Camp.
I'd be stunned if they don't advance. I really would. It is, though, we talked about Barcelona being in this weird patch right now where they've allowed Real Madrid back into the league, and then Real Madrid goes out and loses over the weekend. You know, that's four draws in the last five matches for Barcelona. Something is just not quite right there. And it might just be this little rough patch, and maybe the next time these two play, they'll be fine by then.
But even before Christmas, was everything okay? I mean, they were puttering along nicely, but it was more dramatic what Real Madrid were doing in failing to win. Like, there was when they conceded four goals against Real Betis.
Right.
You know, there were signs that this Barcelona team is not what it used to be.
Lyon have yet to lose in the Champions League. Now, this was also their first clean sheet. So they have a lot of draws. They have 3-3, 2-2. But, you know, they do now have a draw against City, a win against City, a draw against Barcelona. Again, we always just, take a D on Ligue 1, but maybe there are more good teams in there than we quite give it credit for.
Well, you know, Depay is a good player that, you know, kind of has refound himself at Lyon. Nabil Fekir is a great player.
Yeah.
But what happens is, I think Lyon get lost in the wash. Now, they are third in Ligue 1. And they get
we dismiss them because, like I said on last week's podcast, we don't watch enough French football. And even if we did watch it, you know what we'd do? We'd say, can we believe what we're watching here is any good?
Yeah, right. We don't know until we see them do it in the Champions League.
Yeah, the first time we were interested in Lyon this season was...
Like, if we saw Lyon in Ligue 1, we'd say, oh, but it's Guingamp. Like, we wouldn't...
They're a whipping boy on this podcast.
Like, we wouldn't allow ourselves to take... You're right.
Yeah, and you see...
We're very smug.
You see Monaco and the plight they're in as well, and I think we all lump it together and say it's all pretty much terrible. But that's not true.
No, it's certainly not. Before we take a break, while we are talking Champions League, did you want to get in your CONCACAF Champions League, or do you have that later?
Oh, that's later.
Oh.
CONCACAF Champions League is later. It's like the...
Deserves a segment unto itself.
It is the dessert at the end of this podcast.
Wow, I love dessert. We'll go ahead and take a very quick break. We've got a big what to watch for. It's a big weekend. Manchester United-Liverpool. That game has not felt this big in quite some time, I would say. Carabao Cup Final. Couple of Europa Leagues. Oh, Arsenal. Don't laugh. Be objective. All that and more. Don't go anywhere.
Here's Gnabry. And he's past Robertson. And it's off Alisson and away. Held off the challenge of Thiago. Keita's shot is smothered. It's come to Mane now and he's pulled it wide.
Love some Smashing Pumpkins.
Underrated band, I think. They've kind of slipped off the planet a little bit.
Yeah, this is a great album, too. This is the double album, right?
Melancholy and the Infinite,
Infinite Sadness.
But there was always that one CD that people played more than the other one.
Yeah, which was the one that had Tonight Tonight, 1979. They were both on the same track, or the same disc.
Yeah, and wasn't Zero on that too?
Bullet with Butterfly Wings?
Bullet with Butterfly Wings. Or was it divided between the lighter stuff and the heavier stuff?
I don't remember.
Can't remember.
Yeah. Great album. Oh, great band.
They were a super band.
Yeah.
Old Billy Corgan.
Old Billy Corgan. 1979 and Tonight Tonight, two of the best music videos I think I've ever seen.
Tonight Tonight is the almost 1920s animation one.
Yeah,
they're very good. And what was the other one?
1979, it was like teenagers, I think.
Driving around in the car.
Yeah, really enjoyed that one too.
Yeah, whereas Bullet with Butterfly Wings was a terrifying view into some kind of a gravel pit from the future.
Do you still watch music videos?
I do occasionally. When I'm at home in Ireland, my parents for some reason have MTV2. So I put that on. Yeah, I like the idea of music videos.
Yeah, me too.
But unfortunately, reality TV killed all that.
I know. MTV is a weird place now. I don't frequent it.
You don't?
No. No. It's on in my house. My wife loves to watch Teen Mom, 16 and Pregnant. Those are often on our TV, but I don't know. I just can't get into it.
It's not music.
No, it's certainly not. But it is television. Let's see, what to watch for. Europa League, round of 32, second leg, Thursday at 12:55 p.m. Arsenal and Bate Borisov. And Arsenal go into the second leg trailing 1-0. Now, you may, like an Arsenal supporter may say, yes, lose. Let's just end this and focus on what matters, and that is trying to finish top four. But if they do feel that way, I would say that's a bit sad because I think that Arsenal should be capable of trying to finish top four and trying to win this competition.
Can I point everyone towards a Jonathan Liu article about Arsenal and the sad kind of state of nothingness that they're in? The nether zone that they found themselves under Stan Kroenke. It's really a fabulous piece. Just type it in, Jonathan Liu, independent newspapers, and you'll find it online. One of the funniest things to come out of this tie was after the game, some Arsenal fans found themselves in a McDonald's. Mm-hmm. Actually, maybe it was after the pub in Belarus. And who was in their tracksuits eating hamburgers? It was Bate Borisov.
I believe I saw that.
And Alexander Klebb.
Yeah.
A former, would you call him a favourite at Highbury?
He was good. Pretty good Arsenal player.
He was very good and went on to Barcelona. He was in there just munching on a cheeseburger, and that was like the ultimate kind of slap in the face to them, you know?
Right. Like if it was a game of real meaning for Borisov. Like, you don't go celebrate at McDonald's. They're out in a club and they're like living it up. But they just went to McDonald's and had burgers. Like, this is just another night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that Jonathan Lou piece talks about even the way Arsenal fan TV is somehow just... They've all got 1,000-yard stares. It's just the life has been taken from this club.
And I don't mean to pile on them right now. Like,
what do they mean, though? What are they?
Well, you're right. They probably should be... I was going to say they should be better than they are. You know, Aubameyang, Lacazette.
They've got, like, players of real quality, and they've got young players like Guendouzi coming through.
Right.
They've got Torreira, but there's just something not right there. And Jonathan says it's the vision for the club, where the club is going. It's almost like...
Well, what does he say the vision is?
He says there is none.
Oh.
That's the problem.
I see. Let's see, Thursday, 3 o'clock, also in the Europa League, Chelsea and Malmo, 2-1, Chelsea holding a one-goal lead as they head into the second leg. I don't know about you, I have more on Chelsea when we get into the Carabao Cup final preview.
Oh, you're going to sing F Sarri Ball?
I'm not going to sing anything, but I am going to talk about Sarri Ball. Let's see, the Premier League, Sunday, we go straight to Sunday, 9:05 a.m., Arsenal again, and Southampton.
No one's going to be watching that.
Right, because it's on the same time as Manchester United and Liverpool from Old Trafford. And that is big.
Honestly, the Champions League game this week for Liverpool seemed like a bit of a sideshow. It really seemed like the band that warms up for Smashing Pumpkins.
Which is weird.
It shouldn't be, but...
Because you're playing... No offense to some of the other clubs in the Champions League. If it was Liverpool, if it was Liverpool playing Schalke instead of City, I could have said, that's not really a glamour Champions League fixture. Maybe I... like. But it's Bayern. And you're right. It did seem like something was missing at Anfield in that game. And maybe it was this, that you're right. It's just being so overshadowed that the league is so much more important right now to Liverpool fans than the Champions League.
Yeah, and it's a resurgent United. The view of what Manchester United are has now changed massively. And there's a little bit of trepidation mixed into it. Not just excitement, a little bit of fear.
Well, sometimes the rivalry matches, while you are excited for them, are the games that have you most nervous because they're the ones that you just can't afford to lose.
I'm hyped already. I can feel it.
Oh, yeah, you absolutely should be. And you're right. Manchester United have become the team that no one wants to play. And everyone's been talking about Manchester City having gotten back in front on goal differential. But, oh, they got that game at hand. They got the game at hand. Well, this is the game that they have at hand. It's not like Liverpool are playing Brighton.
No, and I was talking with a friend of mine who's a Liverpool fan today. It's also a statement of intent, Andrew, because we are in a Liverpool period now. Okay, the result against Bournemouth was good. Liverpool haven't played that many matches since the two draws that they had back-to-back. So now you want to see our Liverpool back, and what better way to show it than a performance against Manchester United? It's kind of needed.
Yeah. JJ, we have a Solskjaer watch, which once again was comprised of people not knowing how to say his name and not giving any instruction on how to say his name.
All right, I feel like there's a bunch of directions I could take this.
Solskjaer watch.
Solskjaer watch.
Solskjaer watch.
And Solskjaer is winning!
On Caught Offside.
Solskjaer watch. JJ, we wondered after...
It's the most curious jingle we've made so far.
After the PSG match, maybe they're kind of coming back down to earth or whatever. But then they go right back out and they beat Chelsea in a very high-profile FA Cup match, and they look good doing it. Pogba looked good doing it. I give them credit. Like, it was a very quick bounce back. It was not an easy opponent, and they are playing well. I really still think highly of the job that Solskjaer is doing there.
I don't think there's ever been a more comprehensive Manchester United performance at Stamford Bridge. I'm sure someone will tell me about one, but that was excellent. And it was over at halftime. Pogba was excellent. He seemed to drift a little bit out to the left-hand side, and whatever that did to Chelsea, they couldn't cope with it. Great ball for Ander Herrera. Burst in between two defenders then for the next goal. That does massive, massive... how would you describe it? I don't know. Is it like, it's not a boost, but the way that Solskjaer's rebounded from so many questions about his tactics, about what happened against PSG, the obvious questions that we always have because of the way modern social media is, oh, has he been found out, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. The way to rebound from that with such a comprehensive
victory
yeah.
was the important thing.
No, I mean, the fact that he's forced his name into the conversation of being the true manager for them moving forward, which is a thing that when he first took over was laughed at. So I give him a ton of credit for that, because it was going to take something like what he's doing to make it happen.
Yeah.
He's doing it. Now, the next PSG match will be important.
I don't think...
But if they finish top four...
Well, look, I don't think enough has happened in that PSG defeat to dampen the enthusiasm at board level that we're hearing about that's been leaked in the papers. How would it? How could it? I'm sure they will look at PSG and think they are light years ahead of Manchester United in terms of the money they've spent in recruitment, and they have probably on the field that night the best player in the world in Kylian Mbappe. Of course they are where they are, and that will maybe not be the black mark that some people thought it would be.
We move on from that, JJ, to the Carabao Cup final, Sunday at 11:30 a.m., Chelsea and Manchester City. With the possible exception of Wigan finding out they were relegated and then participating in a cup final, I don't remember too many clubs in a cup final where morale is quite as low as it is for Chelsea right now.
It's extremely
low. It's like a
low.
Weird game for the fans to suddenly be like, all right, like, let's get excited. There's a trophy at stake here. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like anyone... I mean, they're walking out before the game is over against United at Stamford Bridge.
They are. And
it just feels like people are not excited about rooting for this team right now.
I can't remember the journalist who tweeted this, but they said that the atmosphere on Monday night at Stamford Bridge was similar to when the Liverpool fans turned on Roy Hodgson. Now think of how disastrous that was that time. And Liverpool were towards the bottom of the Premier League table at that point. So when the fans were turning on Hodgson. So this kind of gives you some context. The chance, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
The rather derogatory chance towards Sarri ball. They are in serious crisis. And also the reports that are coming out of Chelsea, it's been reported by more than a few people that basically this is the timeline. He will play, he will manage in the Carabao Cup, but if they get a spanking in that, which they probably will, or they'll be beaten, he's gone.
Some of this is Chelsea's own fault. I was reading at Sky Sports about how basically when he went to Napoli, took him 18 months, really, to institute the style that he wanted to play. Get players out that he didn't care for, bring in his guys, and get everyone to buy into what he wanted to do. And it was the same deal. Like, he did at Napoli what he's doing at Chelsea, and he did not divert from the plan. So, there were no secrets here when Chelsea made this hire. Everyone knew what he wanted to do, and everyone knew the stubbornness in which he goes about it. If they do fire him, it can only be, I would like to think, because they're succumbing to public pressure and not because they don't like what they're getting from him, because this is kind of the way that it works with him. It's not going to happen overnight.
They had to know what they were getting, and they probably thought it had happened too quickly when they had that run at the start of the season, which, I mean, let's not forget that the performance they put in against Liverpool, in particular at Stamford Bridge, that was pretty impressive. Now, I will say there was 10 minutes before United scored on Monday night when they looked decent. Higuain flashed a header by the post, and you thought, well, maybe this is beginning to click. They are so brittle.
They have too many good players to be bad for 90 minutes every time they play. Like, they're going to score goals and be good once in a while.
But it's more the simplicity with which you find them out. You realize that Alonso and David Luiz defending together is not good. You realize that Jorginho cannot play defensive center mid in the way that you need to. And then it all comes crumbling down. Now, I want to ask you this. Sarri was he was a coach all the while he had a regular day job. And I'm wondering, this system has got him up through the divisions and with Empoli and then on to Napoli. Like, he's wedded to it. This is something that he's developed over 18 years as a professional coach, 20 years. Mm. He's not changing. He's just
not changing.
Not. And so I only see this going one way.
He'll be fired.
He's not going to react to what's happened in the 6-0 against Manchester City.
Right, and Chelsea's board are not going to sit there long enough to allow the team to buy into what it is that he wants them to do. They will react quickly, and I think that he'll be gone before the season is over.
We assume so, but have we ever known less about what's going on at the top at Chelsea? That's what I want.
You're right. You're totally right about that. But let's say there's rumblings about Zidane being ready to come back and, like, some of this is not just about Sarri. Some of this is about like who may make themselves available between now and when the board is ready to make a decision. If they find out that Zidane wants to come back, then that changes everything. I think the things with Sarri, you say like the simplicity of this is frustrating at times. Look at that. Remember when Chelsea really got hammered by Spurs in that 3-1 defeat back in November? Sarri has made just four substitutions from November to now that were not like-for-like changes. There's just like no creativity in changing things up on the fly.
Chelsea fans are tweeting out the substitutions before they happen.
Right, like this one. Ross Barkley for Mateo Kovacic. Because 20 times this season, those two have been subbed for one another. Like a like-for-like sub with those two players 20 times. Another stat that I saw at Sky Sports bear with me because this is very stats. Like, get ready for some serious stats.
I'm capable of listening that long.
We know that Sarri wants to play possession-based style. And so there's this. Just 18.5% of their sequences that involve 10 or more passes resulted in a shot or a touch in the opposition box.
Give me that again because that sounds extremely low.
It is extremely low. 18.5% of their sequences that involve 10 or more passes resulted in a shot or touch in the opposition box. I'll put it in perspective for you. That's 10th in the league. Now, I'd say that's a problem for a team that has their caliber of player playing the sort of style that they want to play. A lot of possession, and they're doing that, but it's resulting in nothing. Only Manchester City have more sequences of 10-plus pass possessions. So they've got the second most kinds of those possessions, but it's resulting in next to nothing for them. Like City have tons of these 10, you know, pass, but
it's going somewhere.
It's oftentimes resulting in a shot or at the very least a touch in the opposition box.
Which is the whole point of a move.
For Chelsea, pass, turnover. Pass, you know, nothing results. They're not getting anything from all of this possession that they've had.
And Jorginho's pass completion stats are right up there with anyone's in the league. But so what?
But it's
sideways.
It's not, right.
It's not going anywhere.
It's not resulting in much of anything.
Jeez.
Now, on the Manchester City side of this, something that I thought was interesting, JJ, that I saw this week was Kevin De Bruyne saying that a quadruple for City is almost impossible. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I wouldn't say it's impossible.
Yeah, I think he's selling them short a little.
But he's going to do that because we entered this period of last season. Well, almost did. It was just around this time when they got knocked out to Wigan in the FA Cup, or maybe it's a little bit later. But there was a lot of talk. Can this team go and win everything? Can they go unbeaten? And he's probably guarding against that. You know what players are like now. I wouldn't read anything into that comment. They'll certainly go and try and win every competition they're in. That much you can tell by even the team they put out at Newport. Field.
What about this comment from De Bruyne? He'll say stuff, man. Like, if you have, like, a radio show in England, he should be a weekly guest on someone's show. He also said this about City. I think other teams figure out what we do maybe a little bit better. They maybe also have better squads. We just added one player. The rest is the same team. The way we play is always going to be the same with Pep. We're not going to change. Everybody knows that.
I'm not quite sure what to read into that because that seems like a knock to say.
Yes, that's what I thought
too. To say that I think other teams figure out what we do maybe a little bit better. Well, not many teams. I mean, a few teams this season are right in surprise scenarios. Last season, Liverpool figured it out. Strange, curious.
Yeah.
Why he would admit to this?
Like it does feel
as
like
he is a member of the team,
throwing a little bit of shade at his own. At his own team and his own manager,
does he feel like he would like to play in a team that plays a different way? Is he kind of bored of the role he's in?
I don't know. You would think that he would kind of enjoy this. Well, maybe he wants to see more of the ball rather than just quick touch pass move.
And he's been out for a lot of the season. Maybe he wants to carry the ball more. Maybe he wants things to go through him more. But I mean, again, he's been injured for so long. I would have thought he was just glad to be back involved.
I'm saying City 3-1.
I'm going to say City 4-1. I think they'll score 4 goals.
Bold. Very bold.
And it'll be 4-0 before Chelsea score.
Okay. Well,
maybe not.
We have a mailbag here.
We have a mailbag. At @SuoSoccerPod on Twitter, caughtoffsidepod at @gmail.com. Daniel Bentley kicks us off with an aggressive question. Mm-hmm. Both of you, Desert Island album, go. Now, Desert Island Discs is usually five albums, right?
Oh, really?
Five songs or five albums. This is not...
Oh, I just thought of my favorite album.
Oh, good, because he only asked for Desert Island album, not plural. So, right. So what did you go with?
Well, look, people who have listened to this long enough know that I am kind of a one-band man.
Which is, I mean...
I adore Guster. I have since I was 15 years old. They've been my favorite band for... what is that? That's almost 20 years. So I got to pick one of their albums, and I went with Guster on Ice. It's a live show they did from Portland, Maine, and I love it. I think it's fantastic. I haven't gotten sick of them yet, so I think on a desert island, like why would I get sick of them at that point? Like if I still love them and love these songs that I've heard 10,000 times, then I don't think it's going to change. So I'm going to go with what I know works for me.
I struggled so much with this one.
Yeah, it wasn't easy.
Oh, it's tough. And I'm not even 100% sold on my choice. I said Octum Baby by U2. And second place was Zoropa by U2. I might glue them together and sneak it onto the island. And third place was Stone Roses by the Stone Roses. But even then, I'm thinking definitely maybe by Oasis.
Never heard you really talk much about U2 on this podcast.
No, because latter U2 in the later years, they've kind of upset me no end in the bland dirge they have released.
It really bothered me when they forced their album onto everyone's phones.
And it wasn't even good.
Oh, I really, like, it really, like, repulsed me.
Yeah, but you forget, you know, they had Unforgettable Fire, Joshua Tree.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they were brilliant.
Yeah. Legends.
Yeah, even Pop was a good album.
I saw them at the Wells Fargo Center when I was in high school.
Nice.
A friend of mine was standing, as people do at a show, singing along, dancing, whatever. And a guy in the row behind us in a stadium of 21,000 people was the only man seated. And my friend, he made the show hell for my friend. Kept telling him, sit down, sit down. And so my friend kept...
The music's too loud.
My friend kept standing up.
Is that marijuana?
And the guy threatened to throw him. We were up in the second level. He threatened to get up and throw him over the balcony.
Sit down, you hippie.
It was like...
Why are you going?
Get a life, dude.
Yeah. Like, I saw them at Philadelphia.
And yeah, me too.
Interpol opened for them. But I didn't see them at the Wells Fargo. Oh, I saw them at the Link, which was unbelievable. Yeah, nice. I've seen them twice in America and twice in Ireland.
Hmm.
I don't think I'll see them again, though. I fear their time has come and gone for me.
Okay.
Ebby. Hello. Hello, Ebby. So I've been hearing this term, proper football man. Can you guys explain to me what that means?
I can't, because I'm not it.
Confused. No. But how would you describe a proper football man? Give me a sentence that describes
him. Let's see. Can't be American.
No, cannot be American.
Has to be probably over the age of 55.
Yeah, an ex-player or ex-manager preferably.
Probably has to be, in the context when it's most often used, usually British or English.
Usually English, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Very stuffy.
Like, doesn't see anything wrong with a long ball.
I don't know about that.
Long balls are okay.
Proper football men, though, I think appreciate Pep.
Proper football men enjoy Pep.
Okay.
They think he's a very good coach. They like what he's done at Man City.
I'm trying to think of, like, who's...
Proper football men don't like VAR or Marco Silva.
Who's an example right now of, like, a classic proper football man?
Phil Thompson or Paul Merson?
All right. Okay.
Would you not think?
Maybe.
Is Lee Dixon one?
I don't know. I think he's more progressive than what I envision in my head a proper football man to be.
Do you think a proper football man would necessarily like the idea of a woman analyst on TV?
I'm not going to answer that.
Yeah, you can't be sure. Some proper football men would be okay with it.
That might be very unfair.
Well, Graham Souness is a proper football man, and he sits on a panel with Alex Scott on Sky TV, and has no issues with it whatsoever. He obviously is a normal human being. Certain proper football men, I feel, would look at it a little bit askance.
I would say they probably wear, like, really high shorts. Cleats would be black.
Yes.
You know, nothing, no flair.
And sliding tackles are fine.
Right.
Always fine. But even if they catch a little bit of the man and the ball, that's...
But elaborate goal celebrations are their kryptonite.
Oh, yeah. Can't have that. Oh, no, their kryptonite is haircuts.
Okay.
And a proper football man might say, if Paul Pogba spent more time on his football and less time on his hair, he might be better. And that's no one in particular.
That was a Scottish accent.
But I was trying to mix it up a bit.
Okay.
Does that explain?
I hope that helped.
Proper football men?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to go back on what I said. Proper football men aren't necessarily sexist.
No, and by the way, I don't want to also say that they have to be exclusively former players or managers. There are plenty of journalists, lifelong journalists.
Who are proper football men.
Definitely.
Would you say there's a bit of proper football man in me?
Yes.
How dare you? I'm progressive.
Ish. What else you got?
Wow.
That hurt you?
A little bit.
Oh, relax.
Matt Rashoff. Hi, guys. Big fan of the pod. I somehow stumbled upon the knowledge. This is great knowledge, by the way. That Gary and Phil Neville's dad's name was Neville Neville. Neville being the first name and the last name.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's true. Upon going to Wikipedia, I also found out that he was a professional cricketer as well. In fact, it was a toss-up for Phil Neville whether he was going to pursue a professional cricket career or continue with the football. I think he chose right. Where does Neville Neville rank among awesome, memorable names in the sports world? Angel Rangel and Coco Crisp are strong candidates for me. Can I give you my three?
Yeah, sure. Oh, man, I didn't look this up.
Why didn't you do that?
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know what to say.
Former Brazilian football manager Wanderlei Luxemburgo.
Okay.
Former Sligo Rovers and South African striker Falcon Rose.
That's nice.
That's nice. And my favorite current one right now. He sounds like a motivational speaker, the Nigerian at Watford, Isaac Success.
Yeah, that's pretty good, like a good professor. I remember Georgetown college basketball in like the mid to late 90s. They had two teammates at the same time that had great names, Boubacar Al and Yahya Ja.
Wow.
Great names.
Those are good names.
Yeah.
DJ Easy. Hello, DJ. I'm DJ Easy, big fan of the show. My question is, if it's so easy to put someone on Jorginho, bracket Sarri ball, and beat Chelsea, why isn't it so easy to do it to Busquets at Barcelona? So I've come up with a little answer for this, because it's not, well, it is entirely clear. First of all, Busquets is a better player than Jorginho, certainly defensively. Secondly, when Barca play teams, certain teams have man-marked him before with the midfielder and either found that just freed up Rakitic or Barca or another Barca midfielder. I remember once Roma tied with them in the Champions League and Dzeko decided when he wasn't attacking he would pick up Busquets and they got a draw. But often Messi drops deep into midfield to receive the ball. Teams occasionally man-mark Busquets, but that would require also man-marking the other Barcelona midfielders. Now, BarcelonaAnalysis.com, which is a thing, did a good piece on when Betis beat Barcelona 4-3 in November and Busquets was actually subbed off before the end. It involved Lo Celso marking Busquets but also man-marking assignments on the remaining two Barcelona midfielders. It was successful, but most teams don't want to play like that. Man-marking is not necessarily in vogue, I wouldn't think, unless you're PSG on Paul Pogba. So that was my answer.
Okay.
I think that's kind of fair. I also think that Busquets is just a better player.
Is that it?
That's it.
There you go.
I thought I'd do a shorter mailbag.
I thought it was great. Red card. I'm going to go first here, if you don't mind. My red card goes to elevators, JJ.
Oh, yeah. You've always hated them.
Sometimes they take us to the floor we want to get to, but sometimes they don't. Like this past Sunday, when Dejan Lovren, Jordan Henderson, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Andy Robertson, Alberto Moreno, and Roberto Firmino all together collectively got stuck in an elevator. Here's some of what it sounded like. Laughter.
This is clearly someone's Instagram story.
Trent's fault. It was Lovren's Instagram story.
Yeah, Lovren, TAA, Mo Salah.
No, Salah. He wasn't in there.
Salah wasn't in there. Yeah. Okay.
They seemed fine. I'm sure they weren't in there for very long, but can be very harrowing for people who.
this is your red card.
For people who have claustrophobia.
Footballers get trapped briefly.
Have you ever been stuck in an elevator?
I have not.
Have you ever been stuck in any place or situation that's undesirable?
There used to be a phone box. In like I live in rural Ireland. For some reason, there was a phone box.
All right.
And I got stuck in it. My brother wedged it closed. I'm pretty sure it was him. But I momentarily couldn't get out, and then I panicked.
I could see
because
that.
It felt kind of enclosing.
I got stuck once, not just me, but a group of us, at the top of a roller coaster at Dorney Park. A roller coaster called Steel Force. We were about 200 feet up at the top before the drop.
Did you cry?
No, I did not cry. But it was kind of like, what's going to happen
how
here?
How high was it?
About 200 feet. I think the drop is 205 feet.
Oh, jeez. How secure did you feel within?
I mean, I felt secure. I was in like the strap and everything. And
your legs weren't dangling. It wasn't one of those.
It was not that kind of roller coaster. No, okay. It was more of like an old school kind. Oh. And they had like the girl, I guess, operating it, walk all the way up to kind of like keep everyone calm. And I was wondering how it was going to resolve. Were they going to have us?
She
walked all the way up.
Good Lord.
I was wondering how
were
it was
these carny
end.
Folk?
No, it wasn't that kind. It's a legit amusement park in Allentown, Pennsylvania. But I was wondering, are they going to make us get off at this height and walk down the stairs? And they didn't. Eventually, it just resumed. And I think everyone was just kind of like nervous the rest of the way. Great roller coaster.
Did you do a full rotation then and finish out the whole thing?
Finished out, yeah. Frightening, though.
No, I'm
frightening.
If I'm getting stuck up there once, I'm take me back to the start. I get off and I...
You'd want to get off and walk down from 200 feet?
No, I mean, once it started moving again, I'd want them to take me back to the start. I would get out and I would tell them that I was suing them. Trauma, Andrew.
Okay,
trauma.
Gotcha. Let's see, what's your red card?
I'm going to require some music. These aren't the best teams. I don't know who these teams are. Why are Houston Dynamo in this competition? Toronto, Guatemala, Dominican Republic, the kind of champions.
Oh, there's more.
Who are these players at high school stadiums in CONCACAF? That's right, folks.
The pomp and drama.
The pomp and circumstance. Toronto FC, last 16 of the CONCACAF Champions League. 12 months ago, Andrew, they were on a march to the CONCACAF Champions League final. They were reigning MLS Cup champs. Best team in MLS ever, they said. Dynasty, Andrew agreed. Last night, Toronto FC were humiliated 4-0 in the round of 16, first leg tie, against Panamanian champs Independiente. Michael Bradley, Lawrence Seaman, Jonathan Osorio, Marky Delgado, Justin Morrow, and Alex Bono all featured for Toronto. So I don't want to hear about, it wasn't their first team.
But Javinko, JJ.
Yeah. They had no shots on target, Andrew. Independiente had 5 and they scored 4. New signing Terence Boyd, fresh from the Bundesliga, missed a penalty. It is still orbiting the planet. Just an absolute mess. And here's how the first goal for Independiente sounded.
Ive chested down. The turning shot is in. Independiente's got the first goal.
If we only knew then how that game was going to turn out.
Yeah. Now, Houston Dynamo got out of Guatemala City with a 1-0 win over Gusastoya, courtesy of a fine strike from the sprightly evergreen DeMarcus Beasley. And the New York Red Bulls will be taking on, as we speak, the Dominican Republic side Atletico Pantoja tonight at Red Bull Arena.
It's right now, it's in the 26th minute, and it's 0-0. So,
okay,
stand by.
Oh, boy.
For updates.
Yeah, so that was just, I mean...
I'll tell you what, the song you do, as much as I adore it and like want to download it and have it at the ready whenever I feel like listening to it, it is one of the most smug, demeaning things that you do.
Is it really?
Is it really?
It's pretty
it's so demeaning.
It is demeaning to the competition. But look.
The whole region, quite frankly.
Oh, stop. Look, I was at dinner in New York for the New York Soccer Awards. And members of Toronto FC, freshly crowned MLS champions, this time last year, were there. Don Garber was there. And there was a lot of backslapping and congratulating. You know, they'd done fantastic. Look at Toronto. Are we talking about a new LA Galaxy kind of dynasty type of thing? Mm-hmm. The resources that they have, that most clubs have in MLS, dwarf what these teams from Guatemala and Panama have.
This was shocking.
This is shocking.
This
Come
is a
on.
Shocking failure. And by the way, let it just be that, though. Like, this is not an indictment of MLS. It's not. This was an upset, and it was, like you just said, a shocker for Toronto to lose the way they did. It does not mean the league is crap. We need to be able to differentiate between the two things.
Right. And I would say that anyone says, well, they're just in preseason. Come on. They're not just in preseason.
And also, that's not a good enough reason.
And a lot of them have three games in preseason played against, you know, good MLS opposition. Come on.
Yeah, this was bad. There's no way around it.
Caught Offside's man of the match.
I'll go quickly here. JJ, I went with the Seattle Sounders. I read this at Pro Soccer Talk. The Sounders are making a commitment to go carbon neutral. Oh, Mother Earth would be proud.
That is great.
I'm reading now from the article. The Sounders worked with the Seattle firm Sustainable Business Consulting to calculate the organization's greenhouse gas emissions and develop a plan to eliminate those sources in the 2019 season and thereafter. For sources that can't be eliminated, like team travel, because they fly on an airplane, the Sounders will work to offset those emissions in cooperation with Forterra, a nonprofit organization dedicated to sustainability. The Sounders will host a tree planting event as well on February 24th to kick off the program. So good for them. What do you do to help the Earth, JJ?
What do I do to help the Earth?
Yeah, how are you pitching in?
I pay attention to recycling.
I nurse seals back to health on weekends.
Don't make fun, because our planet's in peril and you are just...
Who's making fun of anything? I just made the Sounders my man of the match.
Yeah, and then you said you nurse seals back to health.
Maybe I do.
You know, I guarantee you don't do anything for anyone other than Andrew.
I try to recycle and I watch videos on YouTube of grizzly bear interactions at Yellowstone with humans. It's
I actually really like that man of the match until you kind of just... You're talking about smug. This is your Champions League song, as far as I'm concerned.
No, honestly, I'm genuinely happy that the Sounders are doing that. I think that's great.
No, it is very good. It's more than a little bit important. You want me doing my man of the match?
Yeah.
What's
the problem?
We just could sit here and be cynical about the environment.
Just have maybe we need to have a smug off.
A smug, yeah.
Like, who can out-smug the other?
I don't know. Who would win that?
I think you would.
Do I come across as smug, folks?
I find you to be very smug.
Really?
And
regularly?
Hurtful.
Smug and hurtful?
No.
Why would you hang out with me if I was smug and hurtful regularly?
Because maybe I need that in my life.
I'm cynical.
I need to be kept in check. I need to be brought down. I need to be reminded of all of these things. Right now you're making a smug face.
Men of the match. I've selected two little pieces of audio. From relaxed managers responding to questions. The first one I think we should begin with is Arsene Wenger, who is, I don't know, he looks 10 years younger. He doesn't look like the grey-faced man who just every Arsenal upset seemed to be a stab in the back to him. He was a recipient of a Loris Sports Award, don't know what that is, and he spoke about the virus of football in his life.
We know you've been doing some TV work and analysis. Does that hunger remain that you want to continue going to games? You feel an absence in your life if you're not watching football, or do you see a time when you will switch off and just not watch football?
No, honestly, no. I cannot switch off, and I have to accept it. I'm somewhere got that virus somewhere in my body, and it will remain there. When I wake up in the morning, my thinking is, what kind of game is on tonight? You know? And that is my life.
He was
incurable, sadly.
Yeah, but someone asked or inquired once to him, you know, what do you do for time off? And time off was watching videos of football matches. Like, this guy will never change. It's hardwired, but he is looking much better, I can tell you.
He's oddly more likable to me now than, taking the Arsenal-Tottenham thing out of it. Like, just him, the way I view him, I don't know. I kind of like him on TV.
I like him as an analyst. I like him in these informal kind of relaxed scenarios. He talks about his time, and he talks with passion, but he doesn't seem like... I mean, those Wenger press conferences got grim after a while.
And, like, yeah, they got grim, and, you know, fair or not, at Arsenal, he became a joke.
It was sad. You felt like you were watching a man collapse.
Yeah. And like now watching him on TV provide analysis, it's almost like a reminder, like, oh yeah, he actually is really smart and knows a lot about this sport.
The love of the game comes through as well.
Yeah.
And this is Guardiola, who I remember in the first season was so prickly about any question about his tactics, about his previous career in Germany. This is him responding to a journalist from Nigeria about his career and why it is that he's only won the Champions League at Barcelona.
Those who are for Pep believe that Pep is the greatest coach in the world. Those who are against Pep argue that Pep has not been able to win the Champions League since leaving Barcelona. And their argument is because you don't have players like Messi, Xavi, Iniesta. That's why you've not been able to win the Champions League. What do you say to this school of thought? What's your reaction?
I completely agree with them. I'm not going to argue 1 second. Because when I was there, I said many times, I win because these guys are incredible players. But I had in Munich as well, in Manchester as well. But in Barcelona, I was a lucky guy. I'm sorry. I was lucky. I'm agree with them.
This was so mean of him to do this. Because this is a real argument. Like, I've been hearing people talk about this for years, since he was unable to win a Champions League at Bayern.
Oh, yeah, you hear Guardiola.
Right. And so, like, there are so many people, as this argument has existed, that have had his back and have argued in favor of him and have just defended him to the ends of the earth. And now he himself has just completely betrayed all of his most ardent supporters by saying, no, 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 you guys who have been defending me for all these years, you're all wrong. I am lucky. I was lucky at Barcelona. And everyone who's been saying that is right.
But
like, if I were supporting Pep in those arguments for years, I'd be like, what the hell, man? We've been fighting this fight for all this time.
You know, Owen McDevitt on the Second Captain's podcast, he actually asked him, could anyone have won with that Barcelona team? And his response was, of course not. So he's contradicting himself a little bit.
So he's just...
But I think it was a kindly, relaxed answer rather than... He could have gone snippy with that.
Yeah.
And he has in the past with other questions about his style and tactics.
I enjoyed that.
That was just a section I like to call two relaxed men saying relaxed things.
So now we have to like make a feature?
It's a regular segment now. Sorry for shouting at you earlier.
Oh, that's all right. I've been beaten down by life.
By me?
Yeah, you mostly.
What does that mean? We have fun when we come in and do this podcast.
Yeah.
Are you worried about the time? Are we going over time?
I haven't said a word about that, nor would I ever. And the people who think that I would are just wrong. You brought it up.
Okay.
That...
There's an atmosphere in the room.
Because you're a bad guy.
You called me smug earlier as well.
You say it about yourself.
Cynical, not smug.
Even that, it was a smug comment.
All right. I'll try and be better for next week. I don't see much changing.
No. And you shouldn't. Don't ever change. If this were a high school yearbook, I would write that next to your picture.
Don't go
changing. Have a great
summer.
Don't ever change. Well, hey, this was fun. I'm glad that we got to relive all these Champions League games and look ahead to how Maurizio Sarri will fail this weekend. hey. Everybody enjoy the games. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.